not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and copy. You will not be able to...
Now, I've got to confess, I have peeked ahead at a little bit of this George Soros like lecture series, and I'm going to pull out a lot of the pertinent parts that mean something, at least to me and kind of, or me and you and whoever would be the viewers of this, but just to get in the mood for the father of critical theories, need some psilocybin mushrooms while I explore George Soros. Not too much now. I don't want him to convert me, but that never gets easy. Like, and because these are really strong. These are albino penis envies. And they will put your dick in the dirt. It'll have you seeing a kaleidoscope. And these are illegal where I'm at. So, in Denver, Colorado. So, don't give me shit. Let these kick in. Go take care of some stuff. And right around the time I forgot I even took them. Okay, so this is George Soros, one of his lecture series, and he speaks at the Central European University because he basically paid for it all.
Great privilege to introduce this series of five lectures by George Soros
in Budapest to take this guy's money.
Academy of Sciences under the auspices of Central European University. In these lectures, George Soros will draw upon a lifetime of practical and philosophical reflection and share his latest thinking on economics and politics. Today, Mr. Soros will present the fundamentals of his philosophical theory. Each lecture will be
video. The pomp is just unbearable. I'm tripping mushrooms right now, too. BT dub.
Today's lecture will include students from the London School of Economics, in addition to the invited guests at Central European.
One of them is the London School of Economics. That's where he went to school.
The moderator today is the distinguished philosopher Colin McGinn, renowned for his work in the philosophy.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and...
Thank you very much, and thank you for all for coming, and both here and in London. In the course of my life, I've developed a conceptual framework which has helped me both in making money as a hedge fund manager and in spending it as a policy-oriented philanthropist. But the framework itself is not about money. It's about the relationship between thinking and reality, a subject that is extensively studied by philosophers from early on. I started developing my philosophy as a student at the London School of Economics in the late 1950s. I took my final exams 1 year early, and I had a year to fill before I was qualified to receive my degree.
Now, what he's going to describe is nihilism. I mean, he's calling it reflexivity, or it's amoralism. I'm a philosophy guy. It's taxonomically organized in a certain way. It's kind of like action and reaction or whatever, call and response, so to speak. But he's talking about nihilism. Just want to be clear.
I could choose my own tutor, and I chose Karl Popper, whose book, The Open Society and Its Enemies, had made a profound impression on me. In his books, Popper argued that the empirical truth can't be known with absolute certainty. Even scientific laws can't be verified beyond the shadow of a doubt. They can only be falsified by testing. One failed test is enough to falsify but no amount of confirming instances is sufficient to verify.
Let's look that up. The Open Society and its enemies. And what he goes on to say is a fine supposition. He says that, but here's what he's saying, is that socialism hasn't been done at all. The true socialism is this open society, a truly democratic social, with, you know, he talks about socially engineered. Yeah, well, we, here's the thing, to get to socialism, it becomes socialism. That's what, that's the tough titty that you always will contend with if you're a socialist, is that you have to, that it, first of all, destroys all religion, all society, the bourgeois society, and really, it's a revolution. George Soros is dead. Or, no, I mean, he's not dead. He's 81 years old, and he's not going to be here to interpret this critical thinking, basically, where you just burn down everything because, well, it is a white man's world. It's colonialism, whatever excuse they come up with. But does that help people in 2022? Does it help? But sometimes you can be too smart for your intelligent level, if that Josh is like, you can work yourself up, and that's what nihilism is. It's just the complete collapse of philosophizing to where it's like, and it's like, well, you know, if everything was created by a man, then why would I believe it? Because he had his own motivations, yada, yada, yada. And that's what George Soros talks about, that all the sciences were created by man. And there is a grain of truth to be gotten there, is that all the things that are being like kind of meshed in, including his science, in this critical theory, it'll be eschewed, and then in 10 years, people will look back and be like, were we crazy? Because there's a lot of things that that are like, you know, your theories of gravity and your natural sciences and a lot of these things that are like, as far as our reality goes, that we're pretty sure of. And as time goes on, there's a meshing of new ideas. And my hands are, since I just took some psilocybin mushrooms, they're like swirling. And I'm talking, all this is talking on mushrooms, by the way. It's like, but anyway, so, you know, new things get integrated. And a lot of those things end up being disproven. And very few are of the ilk of being like the theory of gravity. I mean, I just said, the theory of relativity just kind of entered that canon of things that we really think we know. But even then, it's theoretical. It's quantum. So, anyway, let this douche pickle top.
Scientific laws are hypothetical in character, and their truth remains subject to testing. Ideologies, which claim to be in possession of the ultimate truth, are making a false claim. Therefore, they can be imposed on society only by force.
Only by force. Yeah, because that just shows, and here, that's the Rousseauian view of the Enlightenment, is that there's one side, is that man is free because God made him free, right? That's the side I subscribe to, and a lot of liberals like me. And then there's the Rousseauian, man is free.
This applies to communism, fascism, and national socialism alike. All these ideologies lead to repression. Popper proposed a more attractive form of social organization, a society, an open society in which people are free to hold divergent opinions, and the rule of law allows people with different views and different interests to live together in peace.
Sounds great. The open society sounds great, right? That's truly social democratic. It's just not, that's not how, it's really the way what he's describing is America. He literally describes America here in this second. The popper's like, it formulates a new idea. Like what? You mean America? Is a Hungarian talking about fucking America as if it's a theory? Homie, that exists.
Having lived through both Nazi and communist occupation here in Hungary, I found the idea of an open society immensely attractive. While I was reading Popper, I was also studying economic theory, and I was struck by the contradiction between Popper's emphasis on imperfect understanding and the theory of perfect competition in economics, which postulated perfect knowledge. This led me to start questioning the assumptions of economic theory. These were the two major theoretical inspirations of my philosophy.
Where
it's also deeply rooted in my personal history.
And I'm probably going to switch or change there. This is going to be a second chapter. Because he actually tells a very remarkable story, and I thought about using it in fiction. I'm going to use it in some type of fiction, you know, like a Ulyssian kind of story. But his father was almost killed during the... His father was surrendered on the front to Russians. His father was fighting for the Austrian-Hungarians, was sent back to Siberia. The Russian Revolution happens, communism comes up, and he's like making this journey to get back to where he's from, and it takes like 3 years, and he sees all kinds of horrors along the way. What? It's literally like Ulysses, and like the greatest story ever told. But he talks about it.
The formative experience of my life was the German occupation of Hungary in 1944. I was not yet 14 years old at the time, coming from a reasonably well-to-do middle-class background, suddenly confronted with the prospect of being deported and killed just because I was Jewish. Fortunately, my father was well prepared for this far from equilibrium experience. He had lived through the Russian Revolution, and that was the formative experience of his life.
He talks about it. His father's not the same.
Life. Until then, he had been an ambitious young man. When the First World War broke out, he volunteered to serve in the Austro-Hungarian army. He was captured by the Russians and taken as a prisoner of war to Siberia. Being ambitious, he became the editor of a newspaper produced by the prisoners.
And also this kind of show, there's this World War II question, because his story, and I mean, I'm going to let him tell it, and then I'm just going to kind of tell you, like, historically, and I'm sure he knows the conflict here is... There are not a whole lot of Jews who were in Hungary who not only stayed there. He's saying his family was making IDs for people. And that he was like out and about just living with the Gestapo, lucky in his investments. I don't really think, you know, he says by 1951, he ended up going to study at the London School of Economics. And his dad wasn't a very motivated guy. And he's got the money somehow.
It was handwritten and displayed on a plank. And it was called the plank. This made him so popular that he was elected the prisoner's representative. Then some soldiers escaped from a neighboring camp, and their prisoner's representative was shot in retaliation.
You know, It's not family money, apparently, is what he's saying. I don't know, but we're going to let him talk. It's just very odd because not many Hungarians are with us who are there in Prague at that time. And he's saying it wasn't like he was hiding like Anne Frank. He's saying he was making IDs basically like, you know, the La Resistance right in front of people.
My father is, instead of waiting for the same thing to happen in his camp, organized a breakout. His plan was to build a raft and sail down to the ocean. But his knowledge of geography was somewhat deficient. He didn't realize that all the rivers in Siberia flow into the Arctic.
Does that sound at all? The Gestapo were very efficient, and that's horrific. It's unfortunate, but it makes you wonder if this guy is really the guy who is being so influential on our world.
They drifted for several weeks before they realized that they were heading for the Arctic, and it took them several more months to make their way back to civilization across the taiga. In the meantime, the Russian Revolution broke out, they became caught up
along
in it.
Sorry, I got
only like after a variety of adventures did my father manage to find his way back to Hungary.
Had he remained along with George
in the camp,
Soros's,
he would have arrived home much sooner.
On George Soros's theory of reflexivity, it's done at Central European University. It's a university that basically he's, you know, paid for. And so many, I mean.
My father came home a changed man. His experiences during the Russian Revolution profoundly affected him.
Basically taking his words and going straight to the horse's mouth. And saying, okay, this is the guy that everyone's talking about. We can see the paper trail, the receipts of how he's racketeering our political discourse in this country as a, a Czechish. No, I mean, my family's from the same exact area that he is. And my family would have been wiped out if we were there during World War II. As a matter of fact, I don't know how many of us remain, but neither here nor there. Let's let George Soros talk. And like I said, this has nothing to do with his religion. And I think a lot of times that would be hiding behind his religion because he is completely not only anti-religion, he's anti all sciences that aren't sciences that was written by George Soros. Sorosism is what I would call. I mean, he is like an antichrist-like character. And I know, I'm not throwing that around. I mean, I'm talking about from a literary perspective. He is a little bit of an antichrist character, for sure. So let's let him talk.
Professionals, if Dr. Fauci, if the doctors tell us that we should take it, I'll be the first in line to take it. Absolutely. But if Donald Trump tells us that we should take it, I'm not taking it.
The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without...